April 22, 2023. It's the Watt for Pedro Show. for Pedro show. Happy Saturday. Started off the show with John Coltrane, with Tommy Flanagan, Calypso. And you probably can hear that noise indicating I'm not man alone mode right now because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention I got with me. Brother Steve Five, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolute. And Yellow Five doing Forevermore was the first tune you gave me. And I think I used the sequence that you gave me, so maybe I fucking got it together chronologically also.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, maybe close enough. What about you bringing us your earliest musical recollection, please?
Yeah. My first musical memory was my mother's voice, I think. Like, I remember when I was maybe 3 or 4 years old, I was crying, and my mom held me and sang, like, I Gave My Love a Cherry, or something. It was like an Appalachian folk song, you know, or that song that that dude on the stairs in Animal House was playing before John Belushi smashed his guitar. But I remember my mom singing that to me when I was a little kid. Very distinct memory, my mother's sweet voice, you know. Then I have two older sisters, and my oldest sister, Sandy, had Roxy Music records. And I remember just being a little kid and just being entranced by those album covers. We also had a Kiss album in there, and that one kind of scared me, but I was totally taken by it. And then my sister Dawn played piano. Like, we had a piano in the living room, so I'd be playing with my toys, and she'd be, you know, playing different stuff. So.
Okay, so there was some musical instruments in the pad you grew up. Did you have to go through the experience of piano lesson?
I tried it, but I was just too frustrated with it, and my parents had already put my sister through piano, so I just sort of, I don't know, I was more into karate and drawing and stuff, so my parents took me to karate instead. But later on, I tried to learn. My mom had an acoustic guitar. She played sometimes in the church, and so I tried to play the solo from One by Metallica on that, like, rusty old strings on that guitar. That was the first time I ever tried. I was probably 12 or 13.
What about before that? Were you in the marching band or the choir at school, shit like that?
I was in the choir a little bit, but that right around that time, right after that, I got a white Squire bass for Christmas, and so I was learning how to play it, and then and I played in the concert band, and it was at a Catholic school, so they had me playing Godspell, and they had all the sheets written out and stuff, and I just was like, ah, this sucks, so I quit doing that. But and that's when I started playing and playing Ramones songs with a buddy that I met,
What was the first record you bought with your own money, or, you know, whatever the fucking medium was, the cassette, CD?
Well, when I was 6 years old, I remember this really well too, because my mom took me to Kmart and she'd let me pick something out, and they had a record rack, like an aisle with records back then, and I was born in 1979, so this would have been 86, 87, something like that, or 85, 86, but. I got Take On Me by A-ha, the 45 of that. That was the first record I ever bought.
And yeah, I with your own money. Because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so that's why I asked that question. What about the first gig you saw?
Oh, the first gig I saw. Well, my dad was a John Denver freak, so I saw John Denver maybe 3 or 4 times before I was like 6 years old. But the first concert I ever went to that I bought with my own money that I chose was it was October 31st, 1993, at the Jar Arena in Akron, Ohio, and it was Nirvana and the Meat Puppets and the Boredoms, it was Halloween night, so it was like the Barney concert when Kurt was dressed as Barney, and I think Pat Smear was dressed as Slash. My older sister took me. It was like I waited on the phone for the Ticketmaster for hours, and we got like maybe the worst seats in the house. We were like, our backs were against the like brick of the in the nosebleed section of, you know, of the building, so it was like probably the farthest you could get. But I was just like, I was, you know, amazed by it. Totally caught the bug then. So, and I think that was my sister had a beer. Like we split a half, you know, like each had a half a beer or something. And so it was like the first time I ever drank a beer, and probably the first time I ever smelled weed. Like was coming through the somebody lit in the rafters or something. So, but yeah, that was my first show. So I was pretty lucky, you know.
Well, actually, the first show was John Denver, because I didn't ask you what was the first gig you paid for. I asked what was the first record you bought with you. So after not graduating. Remember, it's a Watt from Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers. So you can Brother Steve, you can rest your mind assured. Now, after school, not graduating, but in the afternoon, garage band, basement band, bedroom band, did you get into that? What about with that White Squire bass? What happened to that?
Yeah, that. So at first I started out on that, and I was playing with my buddy Jerry Kiefer. We were doing like Ramones covers in Kent, Ohio, and then I switched to guitar a little bit after that, and then I was working at I was working at this place called Chicken Manor in Kent, and it was like, you know, real Midwestern chicken place, and I was washing dishes, and the other kid that washed dishes there was, his name was Justin, and he played drums. And then one of the line cooks was Kevin Glenn, and he played bass. And that was our first band, was from working at that chicken restaurant. And that was Yellow Five. So, we played in my garage. And, you know, the funny thing about that is that I bought a used Fender Twin, and I was playing guitar and Kevin was playing bass, and I had read somewhere about the Minutemen, but we had never heard them. This was like the mid 90s. So like, you know, like there were still, it was hard to get records sometimes, you know, like in the record stores. And like, so we had read about the Minutemen, but we couldn't find any of your records. And, I read that Deep Boone like turned his treble all the way up and his bass all the way down. And, you know, I was like 15, 16 at the time. And I saw that. I just took that to the limit, and it was like ear bleeding. We kind of later figured it out. And then even a couple years after that, actually heard the Minutemen for the first time. But that's, you know. It's a story about that. Actually, that first song, the Yellow Five song, that was like what we kind of imagined like a jazz punk sound would be like without ever actually hearing a jazz punk band, you know, or whatever you'd call it.
Yeah, we just called ourselves a punk band. We thought you could play. I remember D. Boone once talking to me about the, you know, direction of us. He says, look, we can play anything we want as long as we sound like the Minutemen. I said, okay. Now, what about the first Yellow Five gig?
Yeah, that was at this pizza shop and like bar called the Europe Gyro in Kent, and it was us, and then it was this band, the Whippets, and that was my friend Jerry's band that I had first started playing with, and the Whippets later, they later went on to be the Subtones, and they played with Marky Ramone's band or something. That was a couple years later, but yeah, this was, it was a Europe Gyro. I was 16 years old, and I tried to smash my guitar at the end, but I'd never smashed a guitar before, so I hit it on the on the side of the body, and it just wouldn't break. So but that was
besides that, though, was the gig? Yeah, was the gig a success? I mean, that was a failure, but
yeah, no, the gig was a success. We just printed up a bunch of flyers at Kinko's and went all over town, and you know, we were super excited. So I had never booked a show before, so we just like handed out flyers everywhere, put them all up all over the place. So a lot of people came out, and a lot of the older, there were kids that were a couple of years older than us that we really looked up to in some of those bands, there was Harriet the Spy and Party Helicopters, and those bands were playing at that time. That was 1995. And Jamie Stillman, who he was in those bands, who does Earthquaker Devices. He was at that show. He was at my first show. So, we go way back. But
in Kent. It was called Mother Lode. It was upstairs. And D Boom bought a Telecaster. That black Telecaster's from Kent, Ohio.
Oh, really? Was it Woodsy's Music?
Shit, I can't remember the store, but you know, and I can't even.
There's
remember
only
the exact,
really one, right?
And I can only.
There was one music store.
Yeah, but I wasn't through there a lot, okay? And I can't really.
Yeah.
Even recall the exact name of the club, Mother something. Mother's. It was upstairs. This is like maybe 1984. Anyway, I know the bass man for Devo, him and the singer went to college there, and it was very heavy in Kent for them. It's why they got that band going, why they quit school.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. That's what Sly Stone said. I think Numbers Band was maybe Akron.
Yeah, no, Numbers Band is Kent. Yeah.
Well, they were Kent also. Okay. But these places are pretty close. Even in both those towns, they're more inland, but they're not that far from Cleveland either.
Yeah, no, they're 15, 20 minutes away from each other. You would, and about 45 minutes from Cleveland. So.
If you were in SoCal, it would be considered like the same trip. Okay, right. In a way, but not really, because like we're balkanized down to like the block.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So you gave me this gold circle. I want to play.
Down, 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 down. 100 is not my friend, doesn't matter. Today, it doesn't matter. At least they were not surprised.
Cheers. Sure.
Watch for Pedro Show at Chunky Music. Start off with Gold Circle doing My Ghost Haunts the Office. Babes, New York City. It's got to be the worst fucking name for a band ever. I shouldn't say that, but fuck. Hell. Anyway, the song's pretty good. Train. Not John Coltrane, but the vehicle. A lot of noise there over the fucking line, Brother Steve.
Yeah.
Bombas Prendon out of the D.C. area with Time to Go. They got a brand new record. They've been putting them out, people. Steve Wall is fucking wailing. 99 letters after that. Saisen Bako. So, yeah, a box for the Saisen. Above the Tree. This trippy musician from Verona. Tell Andrea knows him. For Tell Stay too. I'm going to get him on the show. Anyway, it's featuring Francesca Matti. And King Above. This was done with Romano Milo. And Barcelona.
Yeah.
He's Chile. You know, fuck. It's not where you're from, it's where you're at, right? That's that works every time. Thank you, Brother Sly. Bjorn Magnuson after that with the Ethereal Faith, the Chunks, whatever it is. Bass players from Scotland, not England. TV Repairman. I think this is from the Quebecois band. Can't Figure You Out. Anglais, though, no Quebecois, no Tabernacle, right? The worst curse word. Adela Mead with Interlude Number 3. Tupa Tupa out of Poland was Sick. Finally, band called Tina with Purple Something or Other. So I'm guessing Gold Circle and Tina are the next bands after Yellow Five. What happened with Yellow Five?
Well, I guess... the drummer started dating my girl that I had been dating, so it kind of fell apart after that. Well, actually, then we got a new drummer. His name was Corey Race, and he was just a kid. Like I was 17, but he was 14, and so he started playing with Yellow Five, and then we decided, well, we should probably just start a new band, and so we started Gold Circle. And we did that for a couple of years, you know, we played in the Kent scene with, this was like the late 90s, so it was, you know, like Party of Helicopters, Man I Fell in Love With, Harriet the Spy, bands like that. And then Corey and I became really, really good friends, but, kind of, we'd get really, you know, agitated at each other and fight with each other, so that broke up. And then about a year or two later, we decided to start playing again, and we met this kid Tyler, and that was Chinese Logos, or Tina was what we ultimately called it. But and Tyler and I, we became fast friends, but like he's kind of like my D Boone, you know, like we played for, you know, a while, and then he ended up passing, so, you know, it was a pretty rough time, and that was right before I moved to New York City, so, yeah, but.
So Tita ends with both Tyler leaving everyone and you leaving Ohio for New York.
Yep.
And what do you do when you get to New York City?
Well, I kicked around for a while. I was like, well, maybe I want to be a writer. I was writing songs, but then I was also working at the Strand Bookstore and just trying to write
Can I ask you, when you were working at Strand Bookstore, was Tim Wright working there also?
This was 2004. By this time,
Tim Wright played guitar and bass for Pere Ubu, and then later bass for DNA.
Oh yeah, yeah, he was.
Yeah. Tony Mamone said by that time he was sporting a cane. Did you see him walking around with a cane?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. He also told me that he tried out this shit called trepanation. You know about that, where you drill a hole in your skull.
Wow.
So you can get high. Yeah, if you expose some of the brain, you get like 10 LSD effects or something. I don't know. I haven't tried it.
That's wild.
That's what Tony Mamone told me. You know, Perubu was huge on the Minutemen. By the way, I'll tell you another influence on the Minutemen. We just lost his brother, Mark Stewart, the singer of the pop group. I found out yesterday. Wow.
Oh,
yeah, it's big blow, big blow. He's been on the show a few times, and they were huge on us. You know, we never even got to see them live, right? They were just records, but you know how that can get, like you were talking about Ramones and stuff. So go back to the Strand. When you mentioned that, did you see Tom Verlaine used to hang out there, right?
Yeah. The first 2 months that I was working there, he would come in every day and, a couple times a week, you know, like almost every day, but, he would go through like all the used books, and then down in the basement, they had like what they called the uncorrected proofs. It's like the advanced copies, and they'd come from publishers or from reviewers that didn't want to review the books or keep them. And, sometimes you could find some real gold in there for like 50 cents. And he would come in, and I eventually just got up the nerve to be like, "Hey, are you Tom Verlaine?" Because I knew it was him as soon as I saw him the first time. And he was gracious enough to have coffee with me, and like we would go out on my lunch break and just hang out at the news bar on University Place and smoke cigarettes, and he'd talk to me about Peter Lofner and Nikola Tesla. He loved Nikola Tesla.
I think they'd say a Lochner talking to people who knew him. He had really long teeth, either that or really receded gums. But my experience with Tom Verlaine, he was always a man of few words. So that's bitching he opened up to you, Brother Steve. We're at the end of the first hour, April 22, 2023 edition of Wild Pedro Show. Special guest, Steve Five. Hold tight for hour two. April 22, 2023. It's the second hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
She was blinding. after the splice. When the temperature's nice. After the patch, when everything's a match. After the patch. After the eddy. When it's had time to sit. When it is smooth, then it's time to move. When it is smooth, go consult your elder. To the thatch, any day that swelters, there's still some shelter beneath the hatch.
Watt for Pedro show started off the second hour with The Library is on Fire with Pink Rock. Chaz Smith after that with The Replicant. Vic Chestnut after that with Swellers. And then finally, The Library is on Fire again, but this time with Magic Bum Rush Hearts. I remember when those Butt Rock Sunset Boulevard bands would put the Z, right? It was on, instead of an S at the end of the name. It's Duff, right? He was in the farts. Fuck art, let's fart, right? I had the NoFX guy tell me, yeah, it ain't, you know, copying the Ramones, and then it's art rock. Yeah, okay. I love when motherfuckers are telling me how you're supposed to be punk, and they're like 20, 30 years after the fact, and it's all safe, and it's all boilerplate, and they went to the fucking Hot Topics to buy their outfit.
And
yeah, you know, we don't have to get on them too hard. It's so fucking easy, right? It's almost like shooting fish in a barrel. But look, okay, so you're working at this library, which is bitching, man. I've heard so many good things about the Strand. Thirst spent a lot of time there, too, he told me. Is that why you called this next proj, Library's on Fire?
Well, yeah, actually, it was because of, Verlaine gave me a book by René Char, who's a French, like, World War II poet. He was kind of like a proto-surrealist guy, you know. He ran with the surrealists, and he wrote a poem called The Library is on Fire, like, La Bibliothèque est en feu. And I had mentioned to Verlaine that I liked René Char's poetry, and then one day when we met up, you know, when he came to the Strand, and on my lunch break, you know, we went for coffee, and he gave me that book, and he's like, oh, this is out of print, you know, so you're not going to be able to find it. This was before, you know, like, you could get stuff on the internet, but so in that book is The Library is on Fire, the poem, so that's, I was like, oh, that's a good, you know, kind of, just as an idea for the general state of, you know, how humanity works or life works, is that, you know, information is always being destroyed as it's created, you know, so it's kind of this forever burning thing or something, you know. That's how the band name came.
The Romans burning the library to Alexandria, and China would do it all the time, right? A new emperor, the history begins with me, and fuck, let's burn all the
exactly
bullshit. The rerun. Just like the last one. We don't learn much. But tell me, who's in the first fucking version of Libraries on Fire?
Okay, so that's Corey Race, the drummer who was also in Tina and Yellow Five.
Ah,
and
then, so he moves to New York City also.
Well, I was in New York for 2 years, then I kind of had like a, you know, pretty intense breakdown. I was still dealing with Tyler's death, and so I moved back to Ohio for a little while, and then and that's where Corey and I started playing together again, and that was how I kind of, and I wrote some songs.
Let me get that straight. So the idea comes from New York City and Tom Verlaine, but it actually gets acted upon when you get back to Ohio with your old buddies. Okay.
Exactly. And then so that was me and Corey, and then Antoine Henderson, and he was from Cleveland. He's still in Cleveland now, and he was our first bass player.
And this first batch, he's killer. This first batch of tunes, like Pink Rock, Magic Bummer, this is part of the first batch, the first version?
Well, so Pink Rock was the first, that was Antoine and Corey, and then I moved back to New York with Antoine. Me and Antoine moved out there, or he moved out there the first time, and I moved back. And he stayed there about 8 months, and he was like, New York City just isn't for me. So he moved back to Cleveland, and then and Corey never moved out. So we met Pete Sestarzik, who is our current and still drummer, and he was also from Ohio, but he was living in New York City, so that's how we knew him. So then we get Pete in the band playing drums, and then Antoine leaves, and then I go one night to see Robert Pollard's art opening in Hell's Kitchen. He was doing an art show at Michael Imperioli's gallery, and I go there, and it's the first time I ever met Bob too. I'd already worked with Todd Tobias, who produced pretty much all of his solo records and a couple of GBB albums, and he had worked on the first Library record back in Ohio, and so I met Bob that night, and then I'm kind of hanging out with, you know, some people around, and there's Mark Hsu, and he's like, oh, I just moved here from Virginia, you know, and I was like, well, do you play bass, or do you play? We're looking for a bass player, and he's like, no, I don't play bass, I play guitar, but I could, you know, or whatever. And I was like, you want to meet Bob? Cause I had just met Bob like maybe 15 minutes before. And it was a real small, you know, kind of setup. So like we went over and basically Mark and I met Bob at the same time. And then, you know, we became friends and Mark started playing in the band. And so that was the Library's on Fire, kind of when we really kicked it up a notch, and then we put out the album. And
is this like I Am a Warrior?
Yeah, so okay, that's Mark Hsu.
Let me play it.
Thank you. turn every nightmare into a dream. Yes, you do. And if I am going to be scouring a dying, ravaged wasteland for oil, may I please scour that dying, ravaged wasteland with you?
about the clothes you wear. Maybe you're just not aware. And asleep in a different dream than me. Tossing through the empty sheets, ready to admit defeat. And I can't let it come to that. I'm walking a fairy tale of streets, closing all the broken doors, 'cause those are what the past was for. And I hope that I find you before. You cut down the forest for the trees, and settle for a guarantee. You trade yourself for tragedy. Snowflakes fall to the floor. Labyrinths of February, so searching for you everywhere. I know that we could be a pair, so maybe you can meet me there.
Watt for Pedro Show, that truck of music start off with Libraries on Fire, now with Mark Shue on bass. I am a warrior. Oh no, I am warrior. No article yep. there, people, just I am warrior. Abigail Whitman. With Why We March, number 9, Remembrance. Abigail was on a couple of editions ago with Jack in the Mystic Elevator. Trippy stuff. Samuel Locke Ward from Iowa City with Wasteland after that. Balk, Crumble Away. Brother Ryan was on the show last week. From Poland, another band from Poland. Artikuli Rolna with Kroll Rib. Sorry, you don't mean to butcher your language, but Troopa does English. Yeah, these guys, they do, but why not? Fuck. And then finally, Library on Fire, The Labyrinths of February. Okay, so where'd you record this album?
Which one?
The one that was the first one with Mark Shue, this one, I Am Warrior and shit.
Okay, well, yeah, so that one, well, the one with I Am Warrior, we did it in New York. That was an EP. But before that, with Magic Bummer's Hearts, we did that. That was kind of our big record, and we did that with Todd Tobias back in Ohio, even though we were living in New York. You know, I come back and forth from New York to Ohio.
Yeah, we should tell the listeners, it ain't really that far. It's just like the state of Pennsylvania. And then 90 miles from Philly to New York City. Because, you know, you were talking about Peter Lochner. He would make trips all the time. In fact, he tried out for TV. Tony tells me the story. Tony's got the red Stratocaster. But he pulled out a pistol at the audition. And Tom Verlaine got kind of freaked out by that. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
So we recorded, it's called Magic Windows, Magic Nights, that LP, in Ohio with Todd Tobias. And then, after that we did another record, which isn't online right, or it's not available right now, called Works on Paper. Then we did another one, which is available, and that's Halcyon and Surrounding Areas, and that was 2014. And then by that time, Mark had kind of quit the band. We were kind of getting frustrated that we weren't getting enough, like success, I guess, but you know, like, or money or something or anything. So we kind of just got frustrated and at some point kind of pointed all our guns at each other and, you know, whatever, but, and it kind of,
you're talking
imploded,
about
but,
the circular firing squad.
Right. There you go.
Kind exactly. of a so, little Mao Zedong kind of trip. Yeah. That's usually very productive.
Yeah, yeah. So
as far as like ending something and getting something like put away, you know what I mean? When you start, yeah, like you already got the world against you, and then when you turn on each other, oh my God.
Yeah, it's just
it's human stuff.
I'm sure
it's human
I was
stuff.
A dick, but what's that?
Human stuff. We take turns being dicks. We take turns being dicks. Look,
exactly,
Brother Steve. We're at the end of the second hour. April 22nd, 2023 edition Watt Pedro Show. Special guest Steve Five. Hold tight for hour three. April 22, 2023. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
To paint the ground, and I still Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show start off the third hour with Brother Earth, not Library on Fire. Both meeting somewhere we've never met before. After that, the Bromley Symphony Orchestra featuring the Underwood Piano Harlequin Quintet with Cities and Names and Leandra from Italo Calvino's Visible Cities. Finally, Morris and Ravenscroft. Sometimes, Smoky Melody. So what are these like side projects, these two things?
Yeah, so Brother Earth is, it's me and Todd Tobias. And, you know, Todd, so he did the first couple of Libraries on Fire albums. And I knew his name because I knew that he had worked with Guided by Voices and Robert Pollard. And he was in Kent recording at the time. So we had never crossed paths. So I had emailed him and then, you know, would track the first record or so. And he has a side project with Bob called Circus Devils. So the way that, at least for a good probably 10 or 15 years, the way that Pollard worked on his records was he would write all the songs, send them to Todd, and then Todd would do all the music. Bob would drive up from Dayton to Kent and then record stuff and record his vocals and everything, and Todd would mix everything. So Todd would do basically all everything that wasn't what the songwriting and the singing. So at that time, they were kind of deep in the thick of that process that they had been doing for album after album. And you know, we recorded our album there, and Todd was like, well, you know, I've got these, all this stuff, all these this extra music that Bob isn't ever going to use. It's all the rejected Pollard, you know, Circus Devils music. So he's like, if you want to take a crack at it, go for it. And he sends me like 40 tracks, you know. I just picked some out and wrote some lyrics and vocals to it. And then we recorded that, and that was Brother Earth. And that was that's off our second or third. We made like three or four records that way. Postal style, like, you know, just sending it back and forth. A couple years later, we came up with this idea of like this kind of psych folk duo called Morris and Ravenscroft, and we released it like anonymously. We didn't want anybody to know who this was. So if they heard it, they were just like, "Who are these two guys?" But it's Todd never sings; he just does music and does production. But our friend Cal McNamara, he was the he was Morris and I was Ravenscroft or vice versa or something like that. But, so that record we put out on cassette just kind of put it out into the ether without ever officially releasing it. But, yeah, so that was another side project that Todd and I did. But Todd Tobias is fantastic, producer and has a great set of ears, you know.
I think he's involved with this one too. This is a Bob Pollard tune called Hipsville, and you can hip us to what that's about when we get done hearing it.
I blue. Curve. Love. Jumanji. Jumanji.
I was looking at Jumanji.
His inner ear on the left side.
I was looking at Jumanji.
Yeah.
For Pedro Show Last Music for this edition. Started that chunk off Bob Pollard doing Hipsville, Where the Frisbees Fly Forever. Then Atavin featured Natasha Noramly doing Mountain Visions. Ryan Carraher, he was on last edition, a live version of Rosetta. Bad Reputation from upstate New York, Hudson Valley people, doing He, kind of Quebecois. No, I think it's actually from France, even though it's closer. Quebec. And finally, the library's on fire. Implicate Order. So where you at right now with music, Brother Steve? Well, no, first get us to the Bob Pollard thing, because that's you on lead guitar, right?
Yeah. So that was, that's off of, I think, was it Elephant Jokes? That's one of Pollard's solo records. I played guitar on that song, and the way that it happened was, I think we were recording Brother Earth or something. Todd and I, you know, I was back in Ohio for, you know, visiting family, and went to record. And he's like, "Hey, you want to play on a Pollard song?" And I was like, "Yeah," you know. And he's like, "All right." He's like, "There's a guitar over there. It's already plugged in, ready to go." And then he's like, "The song's called Where the Frisbees Fly Forever." And he's like, It's like, so just kind of come up with something that sounds like a frisbee flying, right? I was like, all right. And he's like, here, I'll play you the song. And he puts the song on, and I start messing around with it. And the song's like a minute and a half, 2 minutes long or whatever. And I get done with it. And he's like, all right, that was good. I was like, did you record that? And he's like, yeah. I was like, do you want me to do another take? And he's like, no, that's good. So so that's how I played on Pollard's record. I didn't know the song one bit, and I just kind of played something, and then, that was it. That's kind of, I get the sense that sometimes that's, like a first take, best take kind of thing, or, on the spot, so.
Reeling in the years, right? Since it's actually, right. Just, Elliot Randall Elliot. But the guy, the engineer, didn't hit the record button, so he had to do two takes. But he said the only direction he got from Don was Donald Fagen saying, feel the blues. Oh, okay. But it's supposedly Jimmy Page's favorite guitar song. And Donald Fagen later said it was a dumb song, but functional. So where are you with music right now? You're back with The Library's on Fire?
Yeah, so we kind of, after Mark left, that was probably 2012, maybe 2011, and then we were together for another couple of years, and then we put out an album in 2014, and then at that point, I was kind of taking everything real personally and emotionally about music, and so I just kind of threw up my hands and quit, did stuff with the Bernie Sanders campaign, and then was doing art and everything, writing and all that. But when we came back, it was last year we started playing again, Pete Sestarsic and I, and then our bass player after Mark, Travis Tunn, he was in New York when we did our last record, and then he moved to L.A. He's like an audiobook engineer, so he's been recording all our stuff and engineering it all, but he's out in Lake Arrowhead. And so I started writing music for the new, we just started playing together, Pete and I, back in Brooklyn, and then I wrote, set of songs, and we were like, well, let's fly to Los Angeles and record them. So we tracked the drums out in Highland Park, and then we went up to Lake Arrowhead and did all the overdubs at Travis's place. And then
it's not exactly Los Angeles. That's up in the mountains.
Oh yeah, no. We tracked drums in Highland Park, and then he had a place up. But so then we've been kind of doing it back and forth over Dropbox and Pro Tools, which is super cool. I can record something in my bedroom and upload it to Dropbox, and he's mixing something at the same time. I can see, it's really cool. So that's what we've been doing.
Is there a website where people can find out information about The Library is on Fire?
Yeah, there's thelibraryisonfire.lol is our site. And then
Libraryisonfire.lol, people.
Yeah, and then we're also on Instagram at The Library is on Fire, YouTube.
Those corporate websites probably have links from your own website, correct?
Yeah.
Good. So how close you think you are to the album being done?
Well, we're going to put it out in the fall. So we're still kind of writing and recording and stuff, but we're over halfway done.
You've given yourself a target. Well, when it comes out, will you come back on the show? We can play it and you talk about it?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Thank you, Brother Steve. Thanks so much. I know it's been a frustrating voyage, but it sounds like things are working out.
It's great.
But you come back on when you get this album done. I can't wait to hear it. People, it's been an April 22, 2023 edition of Watt Pedro. She'll keep your powder dry.